We're happy to make podcasts available for selected EdWebinars for your listening pleasure. If you'd like to receive a CE certificate, you must watch the video recording. Recordings and quizzes can be found in the EdWebinar archives. Please visit home.edweb.net/podcasts for more information.
All right, folks. Hi, welcome, welcome. Happy, what day is it? Thursday, Friday Eve. You are here for Empowering Language Learners, so strategies for success in self-paced ESL classrooms. And we are so excited for you all to be here, to be a part of this conversation, honestly, and to listen in on some of our stories and some of our experiences that we've had when we were implementing, when we are implementing self-paced classrooms. And so we'll go ahead and get started just so that we can utilize our time efficiently. Hi, everyone. Welcome to this webinar. Again, it is Empowering Language Learners, Strategies for Success in Self-Paced ESL Classrooms. And so now this webinar is actually being sponsored by Modern Classrooms Project. And so if you have never heard of it before, that is A-okay. We're going to play this quick 2-3 minute video to just kind of showcase what Modern Classrooms Project is all about.
Tell me if this has happened to you. You come to school one day, the teacher's at the board, and it's time for the lesson. Except, you were homesick yesterday. So when the teacher starts talking, you're not sure what they're talking about. You're lost. Or maybe you learned this last year. So when the teacher explains what you already know, you're bored. Or maybe you're just having a bad day. It happens. The teacher's talking, but you can't focus. You're distracted. And meanwhile, the teacher's not sure what to do. The teacher is stressed. But what if your teacher steps down from the front of the room? If you are sick, you don't have to worry. Your teacher's lessons are on video, so you can pick up right where you left off. This isn't from YouTube, by the way. Your teacher made the video, and you're watching them explain. So you're not lost anymore. You're engaged. And if you already know the content, you can move ahead and do an extension activity. You can work on this with your classmates. Now you aren't bored anymore, you're challenged. And if you're having a bad day, the teacher has time to sit with you. They can ask what's wrong and help you feel better. You aren't distracted anymore, you feel supported. And by the way, your teacher realizes that they can meet your needs and they can feel successful. We call this a modern classroom. Welcome. In a modern classroom, you'll notice 3 new things. First, your teacher is creating videos for you. You can watch these videos in class or at home. You can pause, rewind, rewatch, or skip ahead if you get it. These don't replace your teacher, they just clone your teacher so that they can support you individually. Next, you'll learn at your own pace. When you get things quickly, you move ahead quickly. When you need more time, you'll have the time you need. This means you'll learn as much as you can without being rushed or held back. Finally, you're really going to learn things. In fact, you'll master them. You won't move to lesson 2 until you really understand lesson 1. So when you learn something new, you're really going to learn it. After all, you're too capable for anything less than true understanding. So that's a modern classroom for you. Now what are you waiting for? Let's learn.
Awesome. Thank you so much for that. I see we have some applauses. Thank you. Thank you. And so we are just so excited to be in this space with 3 educators. And so we have Michelle Spain. We have Alicia Serafin. Is that how you say it, Alicia? Sorry. Yeah. Okay, great. And then, of course, Lydia Crush. And you have me as your moderator. My name is TR, they, them pronouns. And I'm the community engagement manager at Modern Classrooms. And so I was also a former educator of 10 years. I taught ESL and ESL K-12 as well as adult ESL. So I saw in the chat that we had adult ESL teachers as well, which is really exciting. And so I'm just, again, really excited to be in this space. And so before we get started, Michelle, Alicia, and then Lydia, well, let's go ahead and introduce ourselves and then just let the folks know what is currently bringing you joy. It's 2024, right? And it's like, what, the second week? And so let's share that out. Michelle, we'll go first with you.
Hi, I'm Michelle Spain. I'm from Worcester, Massachusetts. I teach ESL for grades 9 through 12. And as far as what brings me joy, Our city theme is joy and justice in the multilingual classroom this year. So what brings me joy is been searching for the activities that I can bring joy to my students. And I have to tell you, Taco Cat Goat Cheese Pizza is one of them. Look it up. So.
Oh, I love that so much. Also, attendees, if you want to go ahead and showcase or just share what's bringing you joy as well in the chat, you're more than welcome to. Lydia, do you want to go ahead and start off?
Yes. Hello, folks. My name is Lydia Kresh. My pronouns are they, them. I'm teaching in Chesterfield, Virginia. It's a little bit outside Richmond, the capital. And one thing that's bringing me joy right now is just being able to get back with my students after the holidays. I had a really nice time taking time for myself over the break. And now that I'm back, I really realized that I did miss my students and getting to hang out with them and catch up with them, asking how their break was. I miss those connections and those relationships, just seeing how they're doing and helping them out with stuff now that I'm back in the classroom again after the break. So it's been a good first week back.
I love to hear that. Our students really do bring me joy, and I miss like just picking at them when we get back, right? And so, Alicia, what about you?
Hello, I am Alicia or Alicia Serafin, depending on the language I'm speaking. I teach in Everett, Massachusetts, which is right outside of Boston. I'm currently assigned to sixth grade. I teach ESL, and I have been teaching seventh grade as well. Prior to that, I was teaching elementary, so I've been focused on really pre-K through eighth grade. And what is bringing me joy is that my youngest at home is learning to read. So when I see him learning to read a new sentence, a new word, I see the same joy in my students when they learn to read something new, when they learn to spell a new word or learn a new sentence frame. We call it the way that we frame the sentence. I see that same excitement.
Yes. So I love that. So we have a spectrum of expertise here, right? And experiences, which I'm really stoked to have conversations about. And so, okay, let's go ahead and get started with our conversation. Our question one, what is an intention that you have this year for your emergent multilinguals? We can start off, Michelle.
So for my multilingual learners this year, besides always being focused on the language, as I mentioned in the introduction, one of my intentions with them is this idea of bringing joy and justice to the classroom. And I've really been a warrior for this, and I've met with some pushback on this from my administration. But it's a learning process for us all, and understanding that opportunities for joy in the classroom also offer opportunities for authentic language interaction, which is really, really important to our specific students. So anytime, you know, I mentioned Taco Cat Goat Cheese Pizza because it's the game I usually start the year with, because you need very little English to get started. And you know, it gives them a chance to actually, it breaks down barriers and they're able to communicate with each other, even if their language acquisition to this point is limited. So part of what I do and part of my intention, and I've been very deliberate about it, is this idea of joy in the multilingual classroom. Not really. It doesn't, you know, we work within the modern classroom structure, but this is when I say we do activities that bring joy. We are actually, that's our whole group time.
We had a couple of questions asking about the game. What is the game called again, Michelle?
I'll say it slower. I'm from Massachusetts, so I speak really fast. I know, I'm sorry. It is Taco Cat Goat Cheese Pizza.
There you go. I've never heard of that, so I'm excited to just kind of sift through.
You can get it on Amazon. So it's like really cheap on Amazon. It's a very easy game to learn. And that's why I start with it at the beginning of the year. And then it's by far my most requested game within our Joy and Justice Mondays.
Oh, I love the concept too of focusing and prioritizing joy, right? Because I think sometimes our students, when they think about school, joy is not the connotation, like it's not the word that pops up for them, right? And so when we bring in joy, right, it makes it that much more engaging and exciting to be in a learning space, regardless of language barriers, right? So I appreciate you sharing that, Michelle, and starting it off with like, you know what, learning should be fun. Learning is fun, right? We got to create this space to make it fun for our students and not just for our teachers, right? Okay, well, thank you for that. Alicia, did you have anything to add?
Yes, a major goal for me is to, so I have, one of my classes is a newcomer class, so levels one and twos, and this is on a 1 through 6 point scale. Level ones and twos would be considered newcomers, typically in their first year to two in the country. And that scale is a WETA scale. In Massachusetts, we are considered a WETA state where the students take a test called Access and they get an assessment which shows their language proficiency level. So one of my classes is a newcomer class, and we're in a high incidence district where we have specific languages that a lot of students speak. So what happens is students come together in this classroom and it is hard, it is challenging to not rely on, oh, here's my best friend, I'm going to speak in Portuguese. Oh, there's my busmate, I'm going to speak in Haitian Creole. And so really pushing the students, sometimes we do use that first language to support our language learning in English. And we use cognates, words that are the same across or very similar across languages, but to really challenge them, okay, you might want to say it in French first, but then say it in English and practicing that and mixing up groups so that we're not always speaking with our small group work with the same students, which is going to prompt us more likely to speak in that first language. So really challenging them, pushing them to speak in that, in English as much as possible, even if we're starting in a first language.
Yeah, I know that I've been in situations, not situations, but like really classrooms with multiple languages. And that's from K to adulthood, right? And so when I taught adult ESL, our students really wanted to talk regardless of the language. So they figured out a way to communicate because there are other ways to communicate. You know, it's not just the verbal language. And so it was just really exciting to see that they know that they're all there to learn the language and that they weren't going to not communicate with each other because they didn't speak that same language. So thank you, Alicia, for that as well. Lydia, what about you? What are your intentions for this year?
Some of the things that I'm really focusing on this year are trying to help my students build their confidence when they're interacting with English. The classes that I teach are mostly for newcomers, so students who are new to the United States or new to English language instruction. And the sheltered geography class that I teach with them, most students, when they interact with English for the first time, they just sort of, it's overwhelming and it's very easy for them to just check out and not want to interact with it. And so the majority, almost every single one of my students speaks Spanish. And so as a bilingual person myself, I specifically choose words in our instructions or in our content and language objectives so that they are cognates for my students. And I help them walk that through. Like, if this is the objective for our day, what are the words that we recognize in this? Like, yes, it's an ocean of English, but there's pieces in here that you can pick out. And using some context clues or recognizing how this word might be similar to a word that you already recognize in your own language, what are some educated guesses that we can make about what this sentence means? Like, you don't have to understand each and every single word to have a basic comprehension of what's going on. And so then instead of looking at this page or this text or this sentence thinking, oh, I understand zero of what's being told to me, maybe you understand 40%. Which is so much bigger than zero, and helping build that confidence about like, okay, well, now you have a starting point. Now we can fill in those gaps using a bilingual dictionary, or now we can fill in these gaps using modeling to help demonstrate or with like acting it out. These are the things that these other words might mean to help them grasp the full comprehension of what's going on. And that helps them be able to be more independent, because then they're not leaning on the crutch of like Google Translate. They're able to do a little bit more of the independent work of figuring out the meaning for something themselves, which ultimately helps their language acquisition because they're building that like mental dictionary themselves.
I really like this thing that you mentioned too, Lydia, of confidence, right? And the resilience part of it, because I know even as an adult, I get really self-conscious when I speak my native tongue because I'm not fluent. And so the whole building confidence is really, really important so that they can be resilient in learning a new language, right? So then really, when we think about this, we're creating a space for our students to be brave enough to make those mistakes with each other and to utilize the language that they're learning. And so it's not, you know, a lot of the times there's a lot of shame that goes along with not knowing a language, right? And there's a lot of othering as well that happens unintentionally, right? And intentionally sometimes. And so building this confidence of like, you know what? 40% is better than 0%. Like, we are showing progress. And that, I think, is something that's worth celebrating. And the when we notice what students are doing and we notice their growth, I think they get to be excited about it too, right? Like, oh, okay, like you do notice. Oh, I am trying. And then also just like, again, just creating that space for students to be brave enough to experiment with the language that they're learning. So these are great intentions. And I'm excited for you all to put this in action as well this school year, the rest of the school year anyway. And so for our next question, what does self-pacing look like in an ELL classroom? I often get asked, or I often hear like, oh, that's not possible, right? Because my students are in all different levels as far as their language, their languages. And so that's not possible. It's too hard. My students will just not understand it because blank, right? So what does self-pacing look like in an ELL classroom? What kind of guardrails or supports that you provide so that your students, especially your newcomers too, who speak like no English, right? How do you provide those supports so that self-pacing can flow in an ELL classroom?
I can go ahead and jump in. So the classes that I'm teaching are designed for newcomers. So I'm lucky enough to be able to have the structure where the focus of my course is newcomer students. But even then, right now it's in January, I have students who are accustomed to the structure and the flow of my class and students who are just arriving today. And those new students who are arriving today are on a different page than the students who've been with me since August. And so how self-pacing works for me, again, the beauty for me that I've noticed with modern classrooms is that it is endlessly flexible. What works for me in my classroom and how I organize things might be completely different from how another ESL teacher who also teaches newcomers decides to organize their own class. So in my own situation, what works for me is that self-pacing is by each lesson. So I organize and create my pacing and my unit so that one lesson is for each day and closes out with an exit ticket mastery check at the end of the lesson, where students have the opportunity to show me that yes, they've mastered the skills or the content for that lesson, and they continue. Or if they show me that they have not mastered those skills, then that's an opportunity to revise, go back, really learn the information, and then continue. And so because each of those lessons are sort of like a stopping point within the unit, the students who have stronger English levels or have a little bit more background knowledge for the geography course that I'm teaching, they move quickly through the lessons and they're able to interact with the should-to-dos or the aspire-to-do lessons, which are those extension activities that as teachers we love and we put our heart and soul into these interesting activities that really push and challenge our students. And then there's always never time. But for me, with my students, I'm able to create these extension activities, and the students that move quicker, they are able to access those entire lessons that other students might not necessarily have the time for, but the other students have been able to show that they've mastered the basic core concepts that are a requirement for the course. So some students are moving more quickly through the course, and other students need more time, and therefore aren't necessarily completing everything, but they're meeting the basics.
Yeah, and I'm going to put in the chat as well Lydia's exemplar for how they introduce the model to their students. So typically, we have a unit zero where students can play around and be introduced to the model. And so take a look at that resource. Lydia's provided that, which is really, really great, actually. And I'm excited to just kind of see how folks can utilize that resource as well. And so one thing too, Lydia, just a kind of a follow-up question, right? Like for newcomers who may not, you know, never spoken English, and I know when I taught ESL, there were a lot of adults as well who have never touched a computer. So that was like another kind of language that I had to teach. And so how did you introduce like, hey, this is the video that we're all going to watch. This is the mastery check that you're probably going to access on the internet. So how do you meet those, the questions and the needs that students may have?
So the first day at the beginning of the year, we step through that first lesson, that Unit Zero lesson, together as a class. Like we will watch the first video together as a class and we'll demonstrate together with them like, okay, this is the name of the lesson. So therefore, looking at the page here that I projected, what are the materials we need to participate in this? You need a headphone. Okay, we're listening to it together. We need a certain paper or a pencil. Where do we find those resources in the classroom? Then watching through the video together, what's the appropriate behavior for when we're interacting with a video? I'm not going to watch a video while being on my phone at the same time. I'm not going to watch a video while listening to YouTube music in my headphones when I should be listening to the teacher's video. Demonstrating what are the appropriate behaviors while we're interacting with this new material. And then stepping through each of the parts, we've completed the video. Now we have the practice opportunity. And as Tony Rose mentioned, a lot of my students are coming from places where they don't have a lot of experience with computers and technology. So for me, as a more tech kind of a person, I find using technology very easy. Other students, it's actually a barrier. So I try to provide digital and paper versions of everything as much as I can so that the students aren't getting hung up about clicking and dragging and dropping. If that's a struggle, they can just write their answer on a piece of paper old school, and that's absolutely valid. And the students, if it's faster for them to drag and drop, then you have that opportunity as well. As a whole class, we do that together in August. And then when I have new students, because now that I'm using Modern Classrooms Project, I have the freedom to spend 25 minutes working one-on-one with a brand new student on their first day or so, that otherwise I might not have if I was in a traditional classroom. So I'm able to walk through that this is how we access the materials, this is where everything is, this is the appropriate behavior, this is what a mastery check is, this is what it means to have the opportunity to try something again. Like, you don't have to be perfect the first time, and that's absolutely okay. And showing, like walking through those steps with my students, either all together as a class, or individually as they're enrolled.
Yeah, walking through it, like modeling it, right, is like really, really important, and like taking it as a whole group so that everyone knows what to do, what the next steps are. And I'm sure too, Lydia, that you have a lot of visual representation as well for things that our students may not have words for just yet, right? But they know just seeing a picture like, oh, that's headphones. Cool. That's where I'm going to go to grab that, right? And so I think this is something that I tell educators too, regardless of whether or not you have students who are learning the language, having visual representation is really useful, right? And another comment that you said too, Lydia, of, you know, some of our students who are not from the U.S., who are immigrating, may not have had technology back home, right? And so our students don't really know what to do with technology. I also like to say that students in the U.S. don't know how to utilize technology efficiently either. and so it's just like it's a skill that we have to teach our students regardless of where they come from, right? Like, because our students know how to TikTok, definitely. But what they don't know is how to utilize it in a way where they can be academically successful. And so I think as a teacher, it really is a skill for us to teach that. And I think modeling it as a whole group is really good. I was able to also observe a teacher who had small groups, right? So students who are working together to in a student or self-paced classroom. So what that means is instead of, you know, you reading or watching the video on your own, you actually have a partner that you're doing this whole process with so that you can also focus and work on speaking skills. Because I think a lot of the times, especially for our students who don't speak English, we talk at them, but we don't provide the opportunity for them to talk at all, right? And so it's like, well, how do we then expect our students to learn the language, to learn how to speak it fluently when there are no speaking opportunities? And so when we think about collaboration, right, like being really intentional with putting students together to have those moments to stop, pause, talk about it, even if it's a limited English, right? Like talk about what you learned, what are some words that came up for you, what are some questions, act it out, but really like providing that access for students to use the words. And so thank you, Lydia, for that. Ooh, I have so many feelings.
May I add on? I think one way of thinking about this is that we are, many of us, actually teaching a content area even as we're teaching newcomers. So for example, with my newcomer class, I focus on ELA and social studies. I heard Lydia say she's focusing on geography. I also teach higher English language proficiency students, and then I'm focused on math and science. So I think although we're really thinking about ESL strategies, like making sure to include sentence frames, previewing vocabulary, focusing on a list of vocabulary, a tier two list of vocabulary where they're going to be able to use that vocabulary across content areas, we are most of the time focused on a content area. So it's ESL, thinking about it in ELA, thinking about it in social studies. So I think sometimes that makes it more intuitive how we can use this model with an ESL class.
Can I add to that?
Yeah.
I just want to add... Because I am strictly a language acquisition teacher, so I don't have a content area. My content is the language. And one of the things that when we were talking before we went live was that for me, we have an ESL curriculum, and Modern Classrooms Project, basically what I say to my colleagues is, Modern Classrooms takes care of the content so I can focus on the language. So I can sit there and assess all day long their reading, writing, speaking, and listening skills specifically. And, you know, it's very easy if you are only a language acquisition teacher and you don't have a separate content area that you're teaching within, it is very easy to get caught up in the content rabbit hole and, you know, like hyperfixate on like the grammar when they're writing or the punctuation or the spelling. And, you know, as a language acquisition teacher, that's not my job. We are working on getting correct spelling conventions and punctuation conventions, but not to teach it in isolation. So I'm working on teaching the language piece, and it gives me the time to work on, okay, I have this group, you know, I have a group of level threes and they really are struggling in writing. So I can take that specific group and work with them on a smaller scale and really, really focus on those writing skills and the conventions that they're going to need across their other content areas. And for us in Massachusetts, they have high stakes testing that they have to pass to graduate. So it's getting that language piece in there. And it's like cloning yourself. I don't know how else to explain it. It just frees you up to do the stuff you wish you could.
Yeah, and time again, I hear that a lot too, Michelle, right? Of we as teachers who are implementing our model, our time is freed up. We do have this time now to spend with our students one-on-one in small groups and really focus on like what they need. And so I think the beauty of the video as well, because I had a lot of students who were emergent multilinguals, right? Students who were learning the language, they loved it because they didn't feel rushed. It was like, I need processing time. And y'all, if y'all speak a different language, if you speak multiple language, you need process time. Okay, because I know in my head, I'm not fluent in Tagalog, but there's still Tagalog in my head. So I'm going to need time to process to make sure that like what I want to say makes sense to the speaker or to the listener. And so like the process time is really important. And I love the fact that they can pause, rewind, right? And like access it whenever and hear it over and over again. Because I think that's another thing too, is like hearing the language is really important. So thank you for pointing that out, Michelle, because, you know, when you were talking about punctuation and grammar, right? I was like, oh my gosh, I was an English teacher, middle school English teacher, and I was very much like grammar, 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 grammar. And then now understanding that like, you know what? Progress, like practice makes progress, not perfect. And so when we want our students to be utilizing proper punctuation or grammar usage, like that's cool, but there's also like the code switching, right? Like when can you use certain words and when, what kind of grammar can you use? And of course, like colloquialism and idioms are a whole thing for emergent multilinguals. Like when I first learned raining cats and dogs, I was so confused because I had no idea what people were talking about. And so like, you know, for us, for native speakers of English, right, it's like so easy to use some words that don't make a lot of sense for people who are not native speakers. So something to keep in mind too. Okay, well, this is great. We have the next question, actually. Michelle, this one goes to you as well. What are some challenges that you've come across when creating a self-paced environment for English language learners? And then how did you overcome those challenges? And I know that you were talking about like different levels and talking about content as well. Was there anything else that you wanted to share?
So I definitely, when I rolled this out to students, I am mostly level 2 and 3. So if you're not familiar with the EPL levels under OWIDA framework, these are at level 2, they still require in high school, 2 periods of ESL on their schedule. A level 3 only requires 1 period. And then when they hit level 5, they test out and they don't need the ESL services anymore. So just a little bit of background if you're not familiar with WIDA. So the biggest challenge I've come across is my level 2s struggled a bit to understand the model. But I was going to bring this up before, but it fits perfectly right here. One of the great things about the videos, and this is just a little tech thing, I actually, for my level 2s, when I'm recording their videos, I make sure that I put them on my YouTube channel. Because as a support, if your videos are on YouTube, they can pull up the subtitles in their native language. So they get that reinforcement. So they're seeing your slides, your content on the screen. They're hearing your voice in English, but they're getting that backup of the subtitles in their native language. And that was what made the difference for my lower level students, was showing them how to access the subtitles in their native language. And so once we were able to do that, a lot of the pushback that I was seeing from my lower students went away. It just went away. And I actually encourage when teachers, content area teachers come to me and say, okay, what strategies can I use? I always recommend they record their lectures. Like just set up your phone and record your lecture and upload it to YouTube, because if your your L's are struggling if you have a lot of newcomers. I'm not in particular a newcomer teacher, just so everybody knows. At level three, most of my students are long-term L's. They're L's that can't get over the hump to get out of ESL. So they've been there for several years. So I just want to point that out, but I do have those lower level twos. But I recommend this to my content area teachers all the time. Like, you know, stop translating the articles, because a lot of our content area teachers are like, well, I provide the articles in every language in my class. And I'm like, well, that's not really doing them any good. But if you record your lecture, they're hearing it in English, they can pause the video, they can go back, but you can back it up with those subtitles in their native language. And I think YouTube, there's like 50 different languages that you can pull up. So that, you know, that would be my pro tip.
Yeah, I think that's the beautiful thing about YouTube, is that you don't actually have to make it public either. You can have it unlisted, so it's only the students that you share those links with. So if you are like figuring out like, oh my gosh, what about, you know, I don't want my face to be everywhere, it doesn't have to be. So I really love that about YouTube. And I think educators are now getting in tune with that, with the subtitles in different languages, and you don't have to pay for it, right? It's not perfect. It's just there as an accessibility guide for folks, right? And so, you know, Michelle, when you're talking about lower level, you're talking about students who are in like the lower spectrum of level two, right? And so those students are able to, they understand. Is that what you're saying? They understand for the most part?
So typically at a level two, their conversational English, they have a lot of conversational English, they will be able to speak to you. Their listening skills may be their strongest point, but as far as they're not necessarily confident speaking to you, but they have a high level of listening comprehension. Typically, they struggle desperately with writing, and you know, reading goes hand in hand with the writing. So at level two, really, they're at the point where they can converse with you. They've got enough that they can carry on a conversation. They've got some academic language, but then the other domains are typically not quite as developed. So they still need a ton of support as far as the language goes.
Yeah. Thank you for that clarification, just for anyone who may have been like questioning what level two meant. And so I appreciate that clarification. And I know I used to assess those, the test, the standardized test, right? Like WIDA, like testing out of those services. And I'm like, yo, this is hard, even for me. What is this? And I also remember too, Lydia, I know that you and I did a webinar together as well, where you talked about like you didn't translate any of your resources. Students really had to be exposed to English so that they can continue focusing on that. Because I think for an educator who may not know any better, right? Because, you know, they're just like, oh, I want to translate everything. So what are your thoughts on not translating everything and ensuring that students are being exposed to the English language?
For me, it's definitely a combination of tactics and strategies that I use in regards to technology to help make sure that my students aren't being automatically presented with a translated version of things, because Chrome likes to translate things ahead of time, and then I will have to remind my students to translate it back to English. So I'll embed things with HTML into my Canvas pages to make sure that my students are interacting with the English language documents or tasks that I've asked them to do. And part of that is also the preparation and planning on my part as the teacher, designing the material so that it is linguistically acceptable and appropriate for them as newcomers. So if I'm learning a language for the first time and it's my first year interacting with, say, Italian with no experience in the language beforehand, being given a 3-page long document to read and then respond to open-ended questions is not linguistically appropriate for me. If I translate it into my native language, then it is, but that's not me learning the language. So the tasks that I might be asking my students to do are linguistically very simple compared to what you would typically ask of a high schooler, such as very simple sentences like describing something with adjectives or I see, and then using different nouns to describe what it is that they're seeing in the image, describing cultural facts or parts about the geography that we're learning together. Simple things like interrelationships of locations on a map. This is north of that. The very simple sentences, but that's linguistically and developmentally appropriate for them based on the fact that they're new to the country. And if I allow them to translate this is north of that into their language, then that's way too simple, and that's not providing them the academic rigor that they deserve. So part of that is the technology aspect, and also the pre-planning on my part to make sure that we're getting the content, the geography course that I teach, in addition to flexing our English muscles to develop these new sentence frames and that pattern.
Yeah, Lydia, I'm going to be honest. The first time I heard you say that, I was like, excuse me, you're not going to allow me to translate. And then like you explained it and I was like, oh, that makes sense. Like we do need to be exposed to the English language. We can't use our first language, our native language as a crutch. Then we won't learn the language, right? So I really like that point. Thank you for clarifying and thank you for making me sit in my discomfort and knowing that there are other ways. Alicia, I'm going to put you on the spot because you've taught elementary school students, right? So I know Michelle was talking about subtitles for students who can read. Now for younger students, that may not be the case because they're learning how to read. I mean, even I've had students as well in middle school, adults as well, who cannot read, and that's fine. So we really have to create a different way, a different avenue for our students to access what they're learning. So what are you thinking would be like the biggest challenge, and how do we overcome this for folks who are teaching students who may not be able to read or don't know how to read just yet?
One way that I can, what I was going to bring up is one of the challenges I see and have seen is that when you have students that have been out for many days, if they're out 4 days in a week, I had a student actually out for about 11 days, then it becomes challenging, even with all the supports, to catch up. So in that case, Tony Rose, you had talked about the collaboration piece. So I think that's a perfect point to have the students collaborate in particular to get that student caught up. And then you have also teachers who are, if they're able to teach it, they know it that well that they're able to teach it. So I think the collaboration piece becomes that much more important. So whether it's watching the video together and then you have a student that you could be asking, there also could be, you could use technology to have the captions read aloud in the other language would be another option. But the particular challenge that I really did want to focus on is even in a self-paced classroom, when students have many absences, particularly in a row, it can become challenging. And then I think more supports are necessary. And that's where bringing in peers can be really helpful.
I thank you for honing in on the community part, right? Of like leaning on each other so that they can learn. And another thing too that came up for me is for our students who are coming from countries who don't have the same letters as us, and then we give them a Chromebook or a computer with just our letters and then expecting for them to know. So for example, Mandarin, not letters, right? And so that's just something to consider as well, of just like there's a lot of patience involved and a lot of like modeling and a lot of just repetition I've seen in the chat as well. And again, visual representation, right? Like if even just signing on a computer could take 30 minutes because students don't know those letters, and that's okay. Just knowing that some of those challenges will probably arise because there's so many languages, which makes this world so beautiful. So, okay, well, thank you for sharing that. I know that we're getting a lot of compliments in the chat and just like share outs as well in the chat. So definitely check that out when you get a chance. Okay, and then we'll move on to our next question. And so What is a piece of advice you wish you had when starting out implementing a self-paced, student-centered classroom? And we can start off with Alicia and then Lydia.
Yes. The first thing that comes to mind, and it's just like with everything, and I would say that the modern classrooms, they're so good mentors. They're so good at focusing on this. Chunk it just like we do for our students and like we focus on for our students. Take it part by part. Don't try to do everything all at once. So really focus on building at the lesson level. Get the feedback you need if you have a mentor, and then build up to the unit level and just be modifying all the time. Maybe focus on one content area if you're focused, if you have multiple content areas that you're teaching. So, you know, we chunk for our students. We make sure that we are giving them the amount of information that they can take in at one point. And we need to do the same thing for ourselves and not get overwhelmed by thinking, okay, I have to do this for my whole classroom. And in fact, all my classes for the whole year.
Yeah, that's definitely one way to burn yourself out and to say, nope, not doing that. thank you, Alicia. What about you, Lydia?
I would definitely chime in with that. The first year that I implemented modern classrooms, I bit off more than I can chew. And I decided to implement in two completely different preps. I was teaching a Spanish class and my ESL class, and not both of them deserved more time and energy and attention that I simply had to give. And I wish going back that I would have just continued with traditional teaching, even though I knew that it wasn't as effective, rather than trying to do everything and then doing everything not as well as I wished. And another thing is also not taking things personally. Like, we put a lot of time and effort and energy into creating these experiences for our students, figuring out how we want our students to interact with the material, how are the students going to discover things, how are students going to reach their own conclusions about the information that we're giving them. And since we're putting a lot of attention and sometimes love into what we're doing, it can hurt if a student's like, nah, I don't wanna. But that's the whole point of modern classrooms, is giving students that choice to be able to decide, these are the activities that are required. These are the activities that are optional and will benefit you. You can do these if you like. You don't have to. And sort of separating ourselves emotionally from the things that we've created and really focusing on what is the important thing for our students and our learners. If these are the important things, then I will identify and label it as a must-do activity. If it's something that is going to help you improve but is not a key tenet of this course, then I need to be able to let go of that and let my students make the choices that are best for themselves, being aware of the fact that they have time constraints, they have jobs, they have other classes, and they're real-life human beings who have their own feelings and needs, and that's okay too. So that's been something that I've been getting better at over the years, and separating myself from my attachment to my work.
Yes, what a great reminder. Michelle, did you want to add on?
So yeah, actually, just a little bit. So the only thing I would say from my perspective, not what advice I wish I had, but what advice I would give is definitely, if you're looking into modern classrooms, do the mentorship program. The free course is great, but nothing compares to having a Lydia on your side when you're just not getting it because you're overthinking it so badly. And it is completely over your head. And they get on a call with you and say, hey, hold on, how about you think about it this way? So Lydia, just to clarify, Lydia was my mentor when I went through the program. And I know I made a call to them because I just was not getting it at all. And they were fantastic in sitting and listening to me, taking the time to sit on that phone call until my thick skull could wrap around the concept of modern classrooms. So definitely, I mean, the free program is so good, but nothing compares to the mentorship program.
Yeah, I'm also thinking too. One of the things that popped up for me is really finding that thought partner. And so if you think about, even if you don't go through a virtual mentorship, which we want you to, because we really don't want pay to be a barrier, where there's lots of scholarships, we find a thought partner, right? Like find one of your teachers in your class, in your school, in your district, and say, hey, I want to try something new. And when we think about modern classroom, we're really talking about student-centered classrooms, right? So utilizing blended learning, utilizing self-paced structures, and utilizing mastery-based learning as well. And so when we think about those three pillars, like we know what they are, but we sometimes struggle with how to implement that in the classroom, right? And so just making sure that when you think about creating or implementing something new in your classroom, a new teaching and learning method, find a thought partner, y'all. It is so much better when you have someone to go through the same thing just so that you can throw ideas at each other. So we also have a Facebook community Facebook group. We have about 17,000 educators there that are constantly sharing resources, which is really great. All for free. You don't have to pay for anything. There's not a paywall. And when you have a questions, our community just comes in and like just takes really good care of you and nurture you and validate all of the feelings that you have. And so when we think about, especially for our students who are newcomers or students who are in level one, level two, level three, whatever level, right? If anything, I feel like those students deserve this type of learning to where they can be accountable and learn those executive functioning skills to be able to prioritize and learn the language as well, right? And so, you know, yeah, I'm a little biased. I love the model as well. And I do find that self-pacing makes it so much better for folks who are coming in because like what Michelle was saying, right? Like you could have students who are level threes, but those are all different level threes. Right. And so really having that opportunity and that option for students to come in wherever and pause whenever and process whenever is really such a beautiful thing. Okay. So Lydia, we have 5 minutes. So if you can answer this in 2 minutes, that would be great. How does teacher mindset come to play when creating a self-paced environment for English language learners?
I would say number one, what I mentioned earlier about creating materials, but allowing students the choice, like actually giving students control over their own learning after we've created the materials for them, as well as the flexibility for ourselves that we are not perfect. The videos that I created my first year, I will never use again. I have improved in my own teaching and my video creating process since then. So I myself as a teacher, I continue to improve and find new things and giving myself the grace and the patience to improve and change and be different. And the things that I created last year, I might not use again. And the things that I'm creating this year, I might not use again either. But the same expectations that I have for my students that they continue to try and put effort towards improving themselves and learning about the world around them is what I try to apply to myself.
Yes. Michelle, Alicia, anything else you want to add on real quick?
I'm just going to jump in. Tony Rose, you had mentioned the Facebook community, and I just want to jump in on the collegiality piece because it is amazing. The modern classroom educators, they share resources like you wouldn't believe. Somebody finds something, they say, hey, here it is, take it, revise it like you want to as works for your students. So in terms of that teacher mindset piece, I think given the community, it makes it so much easier. As you're chunking and you're building up your lesson plans, then building up your unit plans, having those resources available, and it is just amazing the sharing that goes on.
Yes. And Michelle?
I don't think I have anything to add on this one because I would have mentioned the Facebook group as well. Alicia did a great job doing that.
Yes, I love. Two things that I do want to add on. Y'all, believe in your students. Your students can do it. I promise you. I promise you they can do it. And the thing is, students know when you believe in them and when you don't believe in them. So if you have low expectations of students, they're going to match that energy and also make sure that that they do that low expectations, right? So definitely believe in your students. They can do this. It's a lot of feelings that come up when we relinquish control. control, and we allow our students to have all of the autonomy when it comes to learning. So believe in your students is one of the things. And then also be receptive to feedback, because this is a brand new way of teaching and learning for a lot of folks, educators and students. So be receptive to feedback. Your students will probably say, this is trash. Your colleague will probably say, this doesn't make any sense, right? So like, let's talk about it. What makes it trash? Why do you not like it? Is it because it's really trash, or is it because you're afraid of taking ownership and responsibility of your learning? And so students then become more aware of what type of learner they are. And educators are also more aware of what type of learner and educator they are as well with this model when you start creating a student-centered classroom. And so, whew, y'all, I can talk about this all day. I appreciate you all. Thank you so much for being here. For our listeners, for our attendees as well, y'all, we have Michelle here, Alicia, Lydia. Thank you, thank you, thank you for your expertise, for your experiences, for your tips and advice, and just your presence and energy. I really, really appreciate you all. It's been a while for me since I've been in the classroom, and so it's really nice to just kind of see how classrooms are going and how our students are doing as well. And so with that being said, y'all, if you want to know more about Modern Classrooms for Highlights Best Practices, we are all on our social media. Please slide in those DMs. We love some DMs. It's at Modern Class Proj. We also have a podcast. If you want to hear my voice more, we have educators and thought leaders and our podcast as well that are super helpful in implementing a student-centered classroom. And so again, please join our private teacher discussion group, which with about 17,000 educators who, again, willing to give all of the things that you need to be successful. With that being said, we're right on the hour. Hey, y'all, go do something that brings you joy. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you for being here today. And we will touch base with you. Hopefully you'll get the recording and everything that you need. But thank you, Michelle. Thank you, Alicia. Thank you, Lydia. I really appreciate your presence. And again, thank you.
Thank you, TR. Super appreciate it.
We hope you enjoyed this EdWeb podcast. If you would like to receive a CE certificate, you must watch the video recording. Recordings and quizzes can be found in the EdWebinar archives. Please visit home.edweb.net/podcasts for more information.